and here's something interesting. The group of least effective therapists, sorry Sally, contain the highest proportion of MDs, of doctors. But, here's the good news for doctors, the three most effective therapists were doctors. Now, one of them was a female psychiatrist who saw clients only in the drug clinical management and placebo clinical management conditions. In other words, they weren't even meant to be the most effective conditions, or you know, proved not to be the most effective conditions. But she actually got the best results of any therapist. So you've got to think about this, because this is the study that identified, you know, for us here in Australia, IPT and especially CBT as the empirically supported treatments. So it actually said, you know, these are the treatments that you've got to practice. And we're recommending people that learn those two specific approaches to get the best outcomes. The clients came from somebody who was doing neither, who spends 25 minutes hands up medication. And people get better than when they spend an hour, 45 minutes with a psychologist doing empirically supported treatment.
But it wasn't related to the medication that they got, you mean? It's actually a factor of the person.
Well, if it had been, then the idea would be the medication would have been shown to be the superior treatment.
Yeah, something about what they did with them whilst they were doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, this has also been replicated in other trials of, you know, drug versus placebo. There will be some, the best psychiatrists or best doctors get a better result with a placebo than the worst doctors get with the active drug, even though overall the active drug does seem to be better. So a good doctor can give you a sugar pill, right? You go to Dr. B, who's not a good one, they'll give you Zoloft, and the first one improves your depression, not the second one. So people will be wondering about, well, should we ethically give a placebo because, you know, it's so powerful. All right, but I want you to just remember the video of Mason Crosby. How did you get that good? Before we go on to answer that question, I want you to think about a reason or a few reasons that might motivate you to improve what we do. So a lot of jobs are disappearing, or have disappeared, you know, through industrialization processes, right? So farm labor disappeared. And then the next thing to go with the invention of factories was craft skills, so actually making something that someone can, you know, sweat and toil over with some skill disappeared. And the same kind of thing is happening to many services nowadays. And this is all sort of explained in this book called The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman. And he actually talks about 10 forces, and I don't expect you to read that whole slide, but you know, all these things like Berlin Wall came down, right? So he's the transition from people, for people coming from what used to be called the Second World, communist and socialist countries, into, you know, capitalist and market economies. All these other things basically have to do with technology. So outsourcing, insourcing, supply chain, flattening, the internet. These are all leading to a whole lot of services that can be done somewhere cheaper, are getting done somewhere cheaper, or can be done in a way that's cheaper, being done that way. So some of them are computer hardware and software development, IT support, including talking to people through setting up their computers. So you know, you'll have someone in India or Taiwan. If you're in the States or in Australia, they will actually tell you how to install software on the computer. They don't need to be there. Legal services, heard of this in the States, that, you know, some sort of basic legal transactions can get carried out by someone in a third world country who has studied American law. X-ray interpretation. Nursing. My 5-year-old son's been been unwell over the last few days, my wife being nurse on call. Right? So she speaks to a maternal and child health nurse, as it happens, located somewhere in Melbourne. But if she's trained well enough and knows, you know, listed places to refer my wife to, you know, where she can recommend that he gets treatment, that nurse could be located anywhere. Right? So what else can be sent offshore? So if those two can, why not psychotherapy? And how would you do it? Well, if I'm going to find Jason and get supervision via Skype, you can do that. Now, I'm going to pray that the sound works on this, because, you know, when you think about it, there's, in a country like India, a huge number of people who are highly educated, speak English, and often they're actually educated in countries like Australia or the States, and they have the same counselling skills as we have, or they can learn them. And to see how easy it is to learn them, you've got to watch Freaky Friday. So, for those of you that don't know the film, I haven't actually watched it either, those unread act books. Lindsay Lohan, who's on the right, has actually, and her mum, Jamie Curvis, Jamie's a psychotherapist, and they've woken up in each other's bodies. Yeah, that's why it's called Freaky Friday. So, this weird thing has happened where the daughter's become the mum and the mum's become the daughter, and the mum, which is this one now, just trying to figure out how they're going to get through their day, right? And her plan is, to send the daughter in her body to work. Oh, no, it didn't work, so I'll tell you what she said. So, fiddle around with the technology. She says, look, you just sit there, not wisely, you mustn't give advice, that would be unethical. And just every now and again say, how do you feel about it? So that's one way. I mean, you know, given just trained the paraprofessionals to do that, she might have even got away with that for all. I mean, it doesn't. I don't know how the film turns out. Does she end up getting reported to the board or something? She just sat there and asked how I felt about that. I felt depressed. All right. The other force that you've got to think about is that, you know, if therapy is offered this way, it offers all these advantages. It's convenient. It's anonymous. You know, this therapist is not in your community. You're not going to bump into them walking down the street. It's widely accessible, right? So you can live in the country. It doesn't matter if there's no therapist in your town. You can just phone one of these services. The client does it when it suits them. And it's flexible in terms of time, duration, and price. Now, apart from people who are paid less than us in other countries, those countries will catch up economically. Who else could do it? Anybody see this one? Remember the fundamental question? There was a fundamental philosophical question at the heart of this film that comes at the end. And it's a version of the Turing test. So Alan Turing was this mathematician in the 40s who, you know, was one of the pioneers in artificial intelligence, and said, if you could design a computer that, you know how you have chat sessions on the computer, right, with people overseas. If I'm getting chat from a computer and I can't tell that it's not, Petrina, right? So if it says Petrina says da da da, right? And I think, you know, Petrina sounds like a nice person, and I can't tell, then that computer program has passed the Turing test. It's fooled a human being. Okay? Now, they actually did do a bit of work on this use criteria in counselling, pretty much the rule of, you know, just say, how do you feel about that? In the 60s or 70s, a computer program called ELIZA that mimicked Rogerian therapist. Didn't fool everybody, but fooled some. Pretty much just said, you know, the last word or the last three words that you said, feeling upset about my brother. Tell me more about your brother. You know, just tell me more about X. How do you feel about Y? So, I'm kind of making a humorous point, but it's also pretty serious given that you get or seem to get equivalent outcomes from non-professionals. But there's hope because there are people like this extraordinary psychiatrist. Okay. And anyway, you find out that online psychotherapy is as effective as visiting a psychotherapist. And this is a study that's actually come out just in the last week in Australian New Zealand Journal of Psychiatry. What's his name? Dr. Titov from, I think he's Uni of New South Wales. Now, it's not quite artificial intelligence. In fact, there were real psychotherapists there delivering a structured form of CBT via the internet. Okay. But, as I said, I think artificial intelligence will get to the point where you can't tell the difference, so, you know, we could be out of a job. Oh, and look where I found it. Website. Okay. Now, so, and another clue, though, in what he says in the press release about this, after completing the various programs, more than 70% of participants diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder no longer met that diagnostic criteria. It's only one study, but that's a pretty good outcome. In the shyness program, 85% of participants recorded good improvement in their scores on measures of social phobia. And more than a third of depressed patients no longer met the criteria to be diagnosed as clinically depressed. Not bad. The researchers said it was still unclear why the internet programs were so effective. We think it's partly because our programs are highly structured and involve people working systematically through a series of lessons and homework assignments guided by clinical comment. So it's not a huge amount of input from the therapist, and yet it's effective. Okay, but you know, whenever you get reports like this or studies like this showing up from time to time, and whenever they do, the science journalists sort of ask the newspaper reporter reporting on it, ask the researcher, well, does this mean we're going to do away with therapists or whatever? And they usually come up with some version of the answer that Titov gave, which is, it's really about empowering people to be their own therapist or supporting people to develop the confidence to get more specialised face-to-face treatment after they finish. But if it's equivalent, why would you? Okay. So, just before we go on and talk about mastery, do you want to just stand up and stretch? I don't know about you, but I find when someone talks with you for a long time like this is. I said I was going to show you some Australian football. Instead, you'll have to do this in your own time because I've disconnected the internet so we won't get those annoying messages. But if you write down everything after the equals and just search for that clip, you will see something amazing. I think it's actually more impressive than the NFL game. I've got the NFL clip from my son, and he said that some people thought those clips were doctored. This one is Daniel Motlop, an Indigenous Australian football player who plays for Port Adelaide.
I've seen
It's amazing, isn't it? He kicks, okay, so just for those who don't know, in Australian rules, we have four posts that you try to kick the ball between the middle two posts. And when you can boot it sideways off your foot and it curves in, that's called a banana, right? It's a curve. This guy actually stands behind the goalpost, right? So off the field, behind the goalpost, in the stands, and kicks the ball. So it goes forward at the goalpost and around, and bounces on the ground. And you're seeing the shape of an Australian football. It bounces very irregularly. It's not like a soccer ball. Then the other thing he does is that he actually starts with the ball behind his foot, picks it up, no hands, picks it up with one foot, right? So soccer players do that all the time. That's no big deal. It lands on this foot, and again, he curves it into one move. He took two takes to get that. But, and his comment on it when the interviewer asked him, this is the part that I really wanted to capture for you, says, typical sort of humble, I find a lot of Indigenous people incredibly humble. I've just been lucky, I guess. Yeah, right. to get to play for AFL. But the key thing about that is that he got to play in the AFL. Now, that's another clue. He gets to play in the AFL, which means he spends a lot of time practicing this. So, sorry I couldn't show you this, but just a little bit more on how good or bad a therapist can be. So there's a study done by Michael Lambert and colleagues, where they got 56 counsellors, 60% of them male, right? Mix of counselling sites and clinical sites, mix of experience levels, and a mix of therapy approaches. 1,779 clients, all of them seen for a minimum of 15 sessions, with, you notice, a huge variability in treatment length. I've worked in a university counselling centre, and this one sounds a bit like mine, sort of have a little bit of pressure to keep the number of sessions down, but really, as long as the person's distressed or feels the need to come to counselling, they can do it. And what's unique is at this place they measure the outcome using the OQ45, which is Lambert's instrument. So I have a feeling it might be Brigham Young University, but anyway, every session they do the OQ45. Now, I would actually find that a bit of a distressing experience, but that's what they do. Okay. Again, not going to go into the statistics, but a hierarchical linear modeling is a way of measuring change over time, and it's used rather than other methods. It's a kind of like a regression analysis. It's used rather than other methods because you can kind of account for missing data, which you would have if you don't necessarily get to do the questionnaire every single session, or the data's a bit patchy, but there's a huge amount of it, so you can still say something meaningful. Okay. So what this shows is for the entire client sample, say that about the OQ45. It's called the growth curve, by the way, even though it drops down and it's not curved. I actually emailed Mike Lambert about this and said, how come it's so straight? And he said, well, if you look closely, it's not exactly straight. I've got his answer, and I'll fill you in more on that. But anyway, the OQ45, the higher levels are more distressed. So this is good. The clients are getting less distressed as they see this group of counsellors. The clinical cutoff for it, from memory, I think it's either 63 or 66, somewhere around there. So people are getting to below clinical level of distress by the time they do 15 sessions, on average client, average therapist. But back to the variability question amongst therapists, here's the best and worst therapist from this counselling centre. Okay. There was this one therapist who, just to give you the figure on that previous one, So basically, that curve grows at negative growth because it drops down at a rate of 0.79 points per session, nearly one point per session. So people are improving it. This star therapist would be a huge drop there. His or her clients gain nearly 8 points per session. And they're not actually the best therapist there. The reason why is not too complex. Basically, this particular therapist would have mean number of sessions of 1.9. So he or she would only see clients for about two or three sessions. Actually, zero is the first session at this time, because you're doing a change score. So she would see clients on average three sessions. But in fact, there was another therapist who had a not as steep curve, but would see clients for longer, so they would end up more improved on average after they saw that other therapist. Yet, this therapist number 56 along with the triangles, people get worse seeing this person. And give you some more bad news.
Could you just talk about the whole centre number?
The whole centre is...
Does that mean all the therapists at the centre?
Yeah. Oh, not all the therapists, but the 56 that they included in the analysis. I think there were some that just didn't have more than 15 clients. So this is pretty much all the therapists. That therapist whose clients on average deteriorated saw people, I think, for an average of about 10 sessions. So imagine if you're paying for this. Okay. So how do you get better? How do you improve? There's principles to it, and they've been sort of enunciated by Anders Ericsson in the Cambridge Handbook of Expertise and Expert Performance, which is about 920 pages. So if you really want the digestible version, get Jeff Colvin's book, which is what I use, Talent is Overrated, What Really Separates People. And he's got a business take on this because he writes for Forbes magazine. But there's still plenty of useful stuff in it. Here's the principles of improving your performance. You do activities called deliberate practice that are actually designed to improve your performance. They have a purpose. They can be repeated a lot and often. You get immediate feedback. And so this is where psychotherapy is different from football or a sport, because we don't actually know unless the clients tell us. Hence the point of getting the OQ45 done at that particular place. And you want to find out what that is. What that feedback is. Oops, I'm going to go back. It's mentally demanding. So this is why I'm only going to give you a little bit of it in a moment. And it's not fun. Also why I'm only giving you a little bit of it. But if you actually do it seriously, you'll be engaging with something that is painful, like the researcher said. Okay. So here's what I would recommend you do if you're going to do this. You've got to actually put it in your diary. Whether it's every week or every day, I'd recommend every day. Again, that's another principle of the Ericsson studies, is that people who are good at stuff do it every day for up to 4 or 5 hours. I have a client who's a classical musician, and she said when she stopped practicing, that would never happen. When she moved house and was busy doing that stuff, she went from 4 hours practice to 2 hours practice a day for about a week, and she said she could feel it in her hands, that, you know, the change. And then when she went back to doing 4 hours, so, you know, there is a bit of, I think, values-driven reinforcement here. contiguous feedback. It's sort of like, how did I do last session? How am I doing this session? This is where the ACT principles come in. You've got to eliminate anything becoming automatic. So if you have sessions with clients where you kind of go, get mindful, and get present. And one way to do that is to actually, again, structure in a mindfulness exercise in just 2 minutes at the start of your session so that you're present with that client, you know, present with yourself and your own reactions. I had conversations with some counsellors who actually have said they fell asleep during client sessions. And I've felt like that sometimes, you know, little kids and sleepless nights and all that, big meals, you know, letting them go straight from that in after lunch into a session. But what are you paying attention to if you're falling asleep? And I've had clients say that was the done. Okay. So what sort of feedback and when? Jumped through quite a bit of stuff there. Okay. You need two kinds. So first of all, you need process feedback. I'm going to show you a little bit of what that might be, and you need outcome feedback. So you need to know when your clients are getting better, but you also need to know what are the processes and how well are you doing it. So I'm going to hand out, now this is something that actually Jason Luoma and Steve Hayes developed, I think, and I've modified it with some brief headings on the right-hand side. Actually, pass up a few more. So it's called the ACT Core Competency Checklist. And you can find a copy of it in this book. Now, I asked the reading people to loan me this copy because I said I'm going to sell some of your books. Okay. This book is fabulous. It goes through each of those competencies and gives you examples of them. And also gives you kind of prompts that you can actually sort of write out what I would say to a client in that situation. And we're going to do a little bit of this in a few minutes remaining. The other book that's really good for this, and I'm going to use the DVD from this, is Kelly's Mindfulness for Two. It doesn't matter whether you use that book or this book, as long as you do that with it. Okay, set up your schedule. Deliberately do the practice.
Do you see them as different, complementary,
Kelly Wilson gives you that inspiration.
Yeah.
To do the Luoma book.
Yeah. Because.
So number one, number two.
Yeah.
Dirty little
that's
secret.
Awesome.
I started this book and stopped, and that's part of the reason I'm actually going to set up this supervision with Jason, so I can't hide that anymore. You know that I haven't finished this book. It's like my integrity feels not complete standing up here talking about this stuff and I haven't finished it. Haven't finished this book either, but you know, that's okay. I know I will. It's, yeah, exactly what you said. It gives you the inspiration, and it'll give you the inspiration to do that mindfulness exercise at the start of each session as well, and actually in the session, which is what Kelly does beautifully. Yeah. And my dream, by the way, with that handout I've just given you is to kind of compress it so there's 51 or 55 or 60, depending on which version, competencies, to get it down to about 12. So you kind of start with the extended version, you know, practice one of those a week, you've got your program for a year. Then you can kind of look at the list after each session, tick off which ones was I doing, which ones was I not doing. And here's the not fun part. You want to find the ones that you were doing badly. A colleague of mine said that after her sixth or seventh supervision session with one particular supervisor, he said, look, no more coming here telling me about your successful cases. You know, no more than 25% of our time is going to be your successes. Because you don't learn from it. You're already doing it well. So that's the part that's not fun. And the other bit is form or join a group. Because I don't know about you know, but me in relation to things like this, like exercise, that, you know, they're kind of initially aversive, and then they get to the stage where they're reinforcing. If you have a commitment to another group of people, you do it. It's kind of using a little bit of aversive process to manage yourself. Okay. Oh, here's some types of deliberate practice activities. I'm sorry, I'm going to go over for a few minutes just so you can actually get a taste of this. Interpersonal process recall, again, you can Google this. I think Alan Ivey developed this, I might be wrong. We did this in my counselling masters, and it's brilliant. You do a role play with somebody, videotape it, and a third person kind of facilitates this, where, say, if Deborah and I are doing the role play, then Petrina would go, okay, Deborah, as the client, when Julian said this, what did you feel? What happened there for you? And she says that, and I learn what's going on over there with the client. You know, I'm not guessing in my head, I'm actually hearing from the horse's mouth. Same thing then Petrina says, okay, Julian, what were you intending to achieve, or what were you trying to, or what were you responding to when you did this, or when you said that? And she kind of learns, you know, like as another therapist, what kind of moves can be made. Okay, so that's something you can do as a deliberate practice activity. Get your supervisor to observe your videotaped sessions or mock sessions, or audio recorded if that's which are available, and video segments, which is what we're going to do now. Get this to work. Now this is from Kelly's Mindfulness 2, and it's a segment called Bennett and Carrie. I don't know who Bennett is, but I love what he does in here. And here's how I would actually do a deliberate practice activity with this. So we'll play a little bit of it.
Shaky.
And is this the same thing that kind of shows up when you're in the garage with the belt and suspenders and the motor running? And
sure, but then what if I screw it up? I don't do anything right anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you begin to doubt if even it can make this pain go away.
Yeah.
You can make it go away right.
If it doesn't work? If I end up worse?
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you notice about being in that garage and being here right now, feeling this?
Okay, I'm going to play the next bit, and what I want you to do is two things. Notice what your response is to what she says next. You know, what your emotional response inside is, how you feel. And then, what would you do as a therapist? Like, which, say, take an aspect of the hex of legs and go, what response would I give that would be a defusing response? Or that would be a selfless context response? So, you, first of all, are you clear about what I'm asking you? Anybody unclear? So just listen to her response, observe your response, internal, and then come up with, you don't have to share it with anybody, but you know, jot a note down or think about what you would do or say in response to what she says next.
How lonely. I mean, you probably don't think about sitting in the garage.
Can I get you to slow down for just a second here? Go back to lonely for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just hold on, don't say that about you, just...
No, it's fine.
Okay, now, you're going to move on. It's okay if you've got nothing. You feel uncomfortable doing that? Feel uncomfortable? Is there a bit of discomfort in this search for, like, what do I say next? No? Yeah.
This is helping.
Your reaction, and what would you say? Actually going to end because we're over time, but again, that feel a little bit uncomfortable, that, you know, especially that I don't think this is helping. What do you say now? That's the place, that kind of, oh, she thinks this isn't helping. This is where you have to spend a lot of your time if you're going to become a master. So, did a whole lot of talk to get you to this point.
Yeah.
And we're not spending a lot of time here because it's really disagreeable. And I think you would have walked out early. But when you do your practice sessions, you need a peer supervision group or a supervisor who is going to actually hold that place for you, who's not going to rescue you from it. And you're not going to rescue yourself from it. Because, like, you see how she's suffering. And this is what Kelly does so well. Right? This is where we need to sit. It's like we're suffering with the, I'm supposed to help you and you think this is not helping. Okay. So I invite you to go out and practice that, and thank you for being here today. Thank you.